If your right eye offend you, pluck it out, cast it from you, for it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish, and that your whole body should, then that your whole body should be cast into hell. And he goes down the list on that. Well, he says in verse 30, if your right hand offend you, cut it off. What he's really saying is, whatever it takes to be right with God, do it. But you see, the Pharisees were resisting Jesus right from the start, and he's saying, well, that's not going to make it for you. If you don't get hold of the idea that your spirits have got to be transformed by Christ, it's not going to make it. It's the whole passage. I mean, you ought to do whatever you have to be in harmony with God, because if you're not, you're through. That's the whole intent of what he's saying. Now, it has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. But I say unto you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery. Whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery. Now, those are strong words, and they've been used as the basis of denying completely any possibilities of divorce, especially with reference to remarriage. You have a very clear passage on this subject, Luke 6. And what he says is, can a man put away his wife for any cause? Jesus asked that to the disciples, can a man put away his wife for any cause? And Jesus said, yes, he can put her away for any cause. In the Old Testament, under the Mosaic law, a man could put his wife away because he didn't like her cooking. Take note of that, girls. You know, when he asked the disciples that, the disciples, yes, a man can put away his wife for any cause. And Jesus said, that's right, you're right. He can put away his wife for any cause, only he just has to get a bill of divorcement. Now, he said that the bill of divorcement was made for the hardness of your heart, because the human person was not altogether strong enough to do everything properly. In other words, there needed to be mercy on God's part concerning human beings, because their performance is less than salutary. The disciples then said, it is better that a man shouldn't marry. And Jesus said, well, this is only given to those for whom it can be given. And in other words, his attitude toward the divorce situation, which is often misconstrued here, is that Moses allowed a writing of divorcement, which means that a man could put his wife away for any cause in the world. And Jesus said, well, that was done for the hardness of your heart. But from the beginning, it wasn't so. In other words, he's saying, this is not the way God intended it. But because of the conditions under which people live, he allowed some mercy in the matter. Now, I have to say to you that God is not less merciful in the New Testament than he is in the Old. See, the same conditions prevail. People are often inadequate in their performance, and sometimes people make bad judgments. And to consign a person to second-rate position because of divorce is a rather hypocritical thing. People tend to have a graduating scale of sins where some are at the top and some are at the bottom. Someone said once, wrote in, I think, regarding Swaggart, why is it that the only sins that ever get talked about are the sex sins? Nobody talks about the fact that these people have extorted money from others and all the other things that they've done. It's only the sex sins that seem to take top billing. In many churches, a divorced person is a second-rate citizen. Of course, you understand I'm not advocating a divorce. I'm just saying it in terms of what the facts are. Many churches have sort of relegated the divorcee to a second-rate position. Now, the truth of the matter is there's a double standard. So let's say that a young couple in high school fall in love, and they may, in fact, live together for a year and decide that it isn't the right thing, so they quit. Now, let's say the young man finds another person later that he wants to marry. So he goes to the pastor. He says, look, pastor, I really was in trouble. I did this thing. I lived with this girl, and we decided it wasn't right, and we asked the Lord's forgiveness and so forth, and now I would like to marry. Well, a pastor is likely to say, oh, well, the Lord forgives these things. Yes, you were sinners, and the Lord forgives it, and now let's go on. Everything's fine. Okay, now, suppose, on the other hand, this young couple decide to rush off to Mexico and get a marriage certificate, and they come back across the border. Now, they're together, and finally they decide they can't make it, so they separate. Now, the young man goes to the pastor. He says, I found another woman. Of course, he says, I had this previous situation when I had a Mexican marriage. And the pastor says, oh, we can't marry married divorced persons. You see, I won't touch this. So a little piece of paper made an awful lot of difference in that situation, it seems to me. See? And in fact, if later on the young man wants to run for an office in the church, let's say that the previous condition is true, that he had lived with a girl for a while, and then finally married someone else, now he comes up for election, and he says, well, pastor, you know, I lived with that girl for a while. Oh, well, that's a sin that God forgives. Everything is fine. You're forgiven. But if he had the Mexican marriage, he couldn't run for church office, see? Now, he could commit murder, be all right. So the guy gets sent up for murder, gets out again, comes to the pastor. He says, meanwhile, I've become a Christian. I was in jail, serving my time, and I would like to join the church. Yes, that's fine. The Lord forgives all these things. Later, he's going to run for office. Well, I don't know, pastor. I committed a murder. We'll call it manslaughter. I committed man. Oh, well, that's all right. The Lord forgives everything. You know, you're clean. You can now run for office. But if he had a marriage, and then he comes to the pastor, and he says, I want to run for office, the pastor is likely to tell him, no, you can't do that because you're a divorced person. I'm not really saying here that divorce is all right. I'm not saying that murder is all right. I'm just saying the double standard is there, that human beings are likely to put together a very inconsistent package. And so Jesus, in talking about all of this, is merely saying that whatever outward facade there may be of keeping the law, there's a deeper law that is impossible for humans to fulfill except through Christ. That's the essence of the Sermon on the Mount. People like to use that as a standard. I live by the Sermon on the Mount. Do you really? See? Sure, you may not kill anybody, but how about the character assassination? You may love your neighbor. How about your enemies? He's saying that humans are not capable of really reaching God's standard without the salvation that he himself was coming to give them. Then he says, you've heard that it has been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oaths. So he says, I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Now, he's not saying to people, you shouldn't use cuss words. Most people think of that. Don't swear. Well, what he's talking about is entering into an oath. Whereas people will, in a serious way, in those days, would enter into an oath of agreement with someone. And they would say, well, I swear by the temple I will do this thing for you. And it's a serious oath, a serious bringing of the law to bear, or bringing of the temple or the holy things to bear to guarantee or back up the oath. Now, we use the oath today very carelessly, and one will say in a more popular vein, I'll do it by George. You see, well, I don't know who George is in that case, but it's sort of a minor kind of oath. And people will say, in situation of stress. I swear on my mother's Bible or my mother's grave, I didn't do this thing, you see. Well, they're not really as serious as they hope the fish and personal think they are. But at any rate, that's the kind of oath the Lord is saying not to take. And in more strict terms, he's saying don't use God as the guarantee of your actions. I swear by God I'll pay this bill at the end of the week. Don't do that. It's taking God lightly. They were doing it more seriously than we. But a Jew in those days might be inclined to say, I swear by my father or by the temple or by God. And he really means that. He's almost like going into a financial agreement. We talk about cosigners. It's really an old-fashioned way of cosigning. Person is well advised to be careful how they cosign, but that even then is a different thing. You're not swearing by God. You're putting up your house for it. It's not a wise thing. But what he was talking about was the kind of oath that really called God to witness that one was going to do something. And he said, don't do it at all. He said, don't even make vows because it's too careless. It's treating God lightly. The thrust of this whole thing is that human standards are totally inadequate to fulfill the divine requirement of God. Well, Jesus is trying to prove that the only hope people have is to accept his sacrifice. Well, all right, I think we'll pray.